Morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, who's running a little bit late. That's not on?
You're not coming through.
I'm not coming through. Why aren't I coming through? And there I am. I'm coming through as far as I can hear. You did so well with the theme song this time, Doc. After 4 weeks, we finally have a theme song. I don't know what came through or not. This is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet, and I'm here in the, or not here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. She'll be here in just a few minutes. Laron Landis is off. He's taking a parenting class today because he's about to adopt. He and Danny are about to adopt another child. You know, we were talking about it a little bit, and, you know, why after having a kid for 4 years does he have to take a parenting class? Well, because his first child is his, this is the first time he's actually adopting, and there are all kinds of rules and things that you do when you adopt, like they need to teach you that if you're going to foster, because usually it's foster to adopt, if you're going to foster, you can't do things like certain punishments that just seem normal because of the way these kids very often have been treated in their own homes. So they go through all of those parenting rules and the differences between parenting an adopted child, a foster child. Anyway, he's taking a class with Danny. I'm not sure when he gets the new kid. Maybe for Christmas. That's a good time to get a kid. They'll probably wrap it, put it under the tree, knowing the two of them. And there'll be a two-child family. Very suburban of them. We're proud of him. No, we're proud of him and what he's doing. Our guest today is Steve Ramos. Steve is the new editor of the Dallas Voice. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks, Dave.
Tell us a little bit about your background. There was an opening at the Voice. Our editor did leave, and we were editorless for about 4 or 5 weeks.
Right.
And Steve jumped in and changed everything. No. You didn't. Give us a little bit of your background. Where the hell did you come from?
Well, I'm originally from the Texas Panhandle in a small town north of Amarillo in Dumas. And I was there, actually, when I came here. I was working for my hometown paper. The second time I worked there, back in 2004, I was the editor. And so I've worked for papers in Texas, Georgia. I covered the war in Iraq for a bit. And then I saw the posting for Dallas Voice and applied, and so I'm here.
When you were covering the war in Iraq, were you embedded?
I was embedded. Yes, as an embedded reporter with the Marines.
Huh. What was that like?
Oh, wow. I guess because of my age.
Because you were in the military yourself.
I was in the Air Force, right. But I think because of my age, because I was embedded with young men who could have been, who were the age, if I'd had children, would have been my children. So I think that made it more poignant, I guess, more emotional when I saw young men's lives changed or ended, and they could have been my sons.
Mm-hmm. And how long were you there?
Oh, gosh, a total of maybe 16 months.
Hmm. How do you write when you write for... When you're writing and you're embedded, you don't have an office to go back to. I'm so spoiled. I have
well, you know, everything now.
Well,
we've been spoiled by the computer, so yeah. Everything is. You have a satellite phone. You hook up your laptop to the satellite phone, and you just email your stories. Hmm. And photographers are emailing their pictures back.
Hmm.
And the late Patty Fink is with us.
I am, and you were coming through.
I was coming through.
Doc
told me I wasn't coming through. So we had a perfect beginning, Doc, and you ruined it by telling me I wasn't coming through. So even when you do well...
Anyway, it's good to repeat yourself, though.
It is good to repeat myself. So you did that for about 16 months? Mm-hmm. What's it like coming back after being in the middle of a war for 16 months? I mean, you weren't fighting, but that sure...
Well, the embedded reporters, you are with them. So no matter what they're going through, you're going through it as well.
Yeah.
And you're just not armed like they are. Mm-hmm. You're reporting. I guess every war is different. I mean, coming back from the reporters from Vietnam or the first war, I think for this one it was more of the apathy. I think what shocked me of the Americans not being aware of really what was going on in Iraq or Afghanistan, the Americans not aware of the disruption of life in Iraq, for example, mm-hmm. that you have the cradle of civilization in Baghdad and their civilization has come to a standstill because of we're there. And we talk about how many of our men and women were wounded and killed, but we don't even know the accurate number of Iraqis that were killed in hundreds of thousands, and it's disputed. But people don't realize that, you know, it's a total disruption of their life. It's war. So, you know, people don't know if they should go to the market or send their kids to school because of they're being bombed. They're being killed, too, with the tribal violence between the Kurds and the Shiites and the Sunnis. So, you know, they're at war with each other because, you know, Saddam, for all of his horrible nature, he did keep a lid on that, you know, hundreds of years old of animosity between the groups. And when that's removed, again, hundreds of years old of animosity surface and they go after each other, which is what happened in Rwanda, too, as you know.
You know, Dr. Rachel Maddow, spoke about this in her book, Drift, about the difference, the disconnect between the American people and what we do with our military. Mm-hmm. And we no longer feel ownership about what our military does. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so true. We watched it as began the war and the whole, you know, weapons of mass destruction and such. But we were not allowed to see the coffins coming back at Dover.
Right.
We weren't allowed to see the action on television every night. And I'm, you know, young whippersnappers out there won't remember this, but when I was growing up in the middle of the Vietnam War, every night on the television, on the news, you'd see, back in the days of Walter Cronkite.
We had the images.
Yeah, they'd have footage mm-hmm. from guys like you who were out there with the troops, mm-hmm. and you'd see this carnage.
Do you know when I saw a change? 1971 was my freshman year in college. Even I am 39 years old. I do want to make that clear. But in 1971, I guess that was in my previous life, I was a freshman. And there were groups on campus that were fighting the war. There were some people who were for the war. But people were involved. That year, Nixon did away with student deferments. And so my class was vulnerable to being drafted out of college. A student deferment allowed you to put off your draft mm-hmm. year till after your senior year. By doing away with those student deferments, people in my class were actually being called in for physicals. Then came in the lottery, and people relaxed a little bit then, especially if you had a higher number. And then a few months after that, they did away with the draft. And when they did away with the draft, the war lasted till 1975, but that's when war protests ended. That's when, you know, people still were not happy with that war, but the protests ended, the civil disobedience, all that stuff that was going on, it died down. Mm-hmm. And I really see it as dating from then, because we were not...
But also Americans weren't informed about even what our troops were battling, because initially they weren't even armed properly. Their vehicles weren't armed properly.
And people were sending Kevlar to their kids, raising money at home for the five
and
or
they
six
were buying their
bed.
Own as well. And there was one point where the Marines, they were drinking from the river. And when you reported that, you would get hate mail because Americans were saying we would never send our troops like over there unequipped. Well, that's the way it was. And then, you know, after the fall of Baghdad, then the museums, and this again is the cradle of civilization, so you can imagine that the antiquities that were there. And so the museums are being looted, everything's being looted, and Rumsfeld said, well, that's what happens in war. Mm-hmm. You know, that we didn't have a plan. We had no plan for the fall of Baghdad at all. And we thought that they were going to welcome us, but then, you know, the insurgency was created when we didn't use their military as we promised we were going to use their military.
Their military.
Well, but we had promised them that we were going to use them in the transition. And then, you know, someone made a capricious decision that they weren't going to be used. And we have 300,000 armed men who now have no jobs and they're armed. And they know where all the caches are out there that we didn't secure. And so they just go get them. And now they're mad at us. And guess what they did? They joined the insurgency.
This is a different segue, but this is exactly why we have computer viruses today. Because when the Eastern Europe and Russia fell from communism, all of these highly intelligent people had no jobs. Mm-hmm. And rather than program for computers in the positive way, they said, I'm going to get you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to disrupt mm-hmm. you, and I'm going to cause trouble. Because they were left with right. this situation
that nobody planned for. Imagine the city of Dallas all of a sudden is occupied, mm-hmm. and we don't have jobs, and we don't have running water, we don't have electricity, we have no infrastructure, and it's dangerous to get out. Mm-hmm. Yes, everything was at a standstill. You're wondering how you're going to eat tomorrow.
So you were there for 16 months.
At two different periods because you rotate with the troops.
Oh, okay.
And before that, you know, I was working for a paper in Georgia, and I was there when we invaded Iraq. And it was interesting because I wasn't the executive. I was the managing editor, and the executive editor and I, we did not believe that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. So we were opposed to going in. And I remember there were, in Georgia and Atlanta, there were marches, you know, people who were protesting us going over there. And even law enforcement officials were harassing them because we were told we were not patriotic. Well, I care about our young men and women going to war. Let's make sure. And I didn't believe they had weapons because of after the first war, you know, Saddam was pretty much declawed. But he's surrounded by enemies. There's Iran. They're blood enemies. And so he has to do all this posturing to let his enemies know, I'm still armed. Don't bother us. Don't attack us. Mm-hmm. So, of course, he's posturing and coming off, you know, as a tough guy to protect himself. But after the first Gulf War, he was pretty much declawed. He didn't have anything that... And, you know, the famous articles that appeared in the New York Times. And people, it really gets me because when people talk about the liberal press, mm-hmm. I just, what? Where? Where is that coming from?
Because, and they're saying New York Times in particular.
Yeah.
And New York Times is the one that
was going with Bush and saying, yes, we need to go, and using all of this information that was later discredited. And so when people attack and say the liberal press, where?
Mm-hmm. Well, exactly.
We're just objective, and because we challenge a decision that's going to send us into war. But here's the New York Times.
And they were actually embedded with the administration.
Well, and that's another interesting thing, true. Because this shows the brilliance of that administration's propaganda. Because when you embed, it was different in Vietnam. They weren't embedded. But when you embed reporters with the troops, you start bonding with the troops.
Sure.
And you identify with them, you become one of them, so you're less apt to report My Lai, for example. Mm-hmm. You're not, because you feel like you're one of them, so you're not going to betray them when you see them committing a war crime. You're not gonna. You're more apt not to do anything. So it really was a brilliant propaganda move, rather than letting the reporters stay back and be objective like mm-hmm. they did in Vietnam.
So how did you maintain your objectivity? Because I'm assuming that you did everything you could to try to.
Well, you have to, because it's important. You're recording history. And I remember when I was going to go, a friend said, if you want to commit suicide, why don't you just put a gun to your head? And I said, what reporter wouldn't want to do this? This is what a reporter lives for, because we're reporting history. Mm-hmm. And so it's your job to make sure that the information, what's going on, that you are reporting it to the Americans accurately. And actually what I wanted to do, I don't know if you're familiar with Ernie Pyle. Mm-hmm. He was a famous columnist during World War II, and he was greatly beloved by the American people because he gave the soldiers a face. He put a face to them, and so his columns were so popular because, you know, World War II, there was no television, anything like that. And so here's Ernie Pyle reporting from the front lines. He's kind of embedded with them, but he's talking, he's making the soldiers' lives personal. Mm-hmm. You know, what they're going through to the American people. And that's what I wanted to do, because when I would see the news say two soldiers killed, three Marines killed. Well, this is a death that is going to affect this family for generations. And instead of just statistics, numbers, who are they? And these are 18, 19, 20-year-old men and women who are performing heroic things every day that aren't, you know, they're not getting medals of honor for them, but they're performing heroic acts that are deserving of a medal mm-hmm. of honor. Hmm. So you have to maintain that objectivity, even though someone might be threatening you, where an officer or, you know, a colonel or somebody is threatening you that they were going to kick you out if you report this. But it's important to keep them in line, too. And crimes do happen. It is war. And people want it to be so sanitized, but it's not. It's very nasty. And it's a, you know, it's cutthroat. So I feel like we should have done more, actually, in Afghanistan especially. You know, when you go to war, you go to war.
I remember those times, especially in 2003, right after we went in to Iraq. The attitude here was that, I mean, if you just mentioned it in the grocery store, people would glare at you. I mean, like, don't criticize. Don't criticize. That's un-American. Well, it's un-American to speak against the president, to speak against...
Because we still had that 2001 September 11th mentality that was drummed into everybody. You know, after Pearl Harbor, I think it was... It might not have been the next day, but I think it was the day after that. The Congress started an investigation. Where's the September 11th investigation? What happened? How did we let this happen? Never happened. Never happened.
Right.
Well, the 9/11 Commission did occur, but it occurred much later. And
years later. And they weren't really looking for anything. They were trying to prove that, yeah, we'll do that.
It was sort of like the Warren Commission. Sort of.
It was sort of like the Warren Commission. And speaking of the Warren Commission, we need to take a break in just a couple of minutes, but we'll talk about this afterwards. This week, of course, was the 50th anniversary of President Kennedy's, and yes, I will say the word assassination. I know. We've been told, all of the press has been told by the city, don't use the word assassination when it's not necessary because it gives the city a bad name. The city had something of a commemoration. Most of us were not allowed to attend. Those who did, including all city officials, had to go through a full background check. I was talking to Valletta Lill, former city council person from Oak Lawn, and she said, yeah, I went through a whole background check. She, you know, I said to her, well, it's supposed to rain tomorrow. Gee, sorry, you can't bring your umbrella.
Right.
Yeah, gee, thanks. You know, I said to her, what were they worried about you for? I understand why they were worried about Chris Luna. what with you? She said, I don't know. So,
the one who made out was the guy with the selling the clear ponchos.
Clear ponchos
they were everywhere.
Yep. Yep. So why don't we take our break? You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guest is Steve Ramos. He's the new editor of the Dallas Voice.
It's almost here. This Thursday, Thanksgiving morning, it's a very special KNON tradition, and you are invited. This is Blue Lisa from KNON's Big Texas Blues Radio Show, and I'm hosting a live broadcast in the KNON Live Music Room during my show this Thursday, Thanksgiving morning. We'll have live music from the Reverend K.M. Williams, Holland K. Smith, KNON's own Greg A. Smith performing with Jay Mack, and James Hinkle performing with Jackie Don Lowe. Chef Ivan from the Alligator Cafe is preparing his Thanksgiving special. You can't get this menu any other time of the year. It's for this event only. Hurry and get your tickets because seating is limited. Tickets and more information are at knon.org. Doors open at 8:30 a.m. and we go on the air at 9 a.m. It's a great way to start your Thanksgiving day with your friends from Community Radio and the Blues Community. This Thursday, Thanksgiving morning at the KNON Live Music Studio, this is a KNON benefit event.
The Dallas Volunteer Attorney Program, a joint initiative of the Dallas Bar Association and Legal Aid of Northwest Texas. It is an organization dedicated to increasing and enhancing pro bono legal services to the poor in Dallas through the recruitment, training, and support of volunteer attorneys. DVAP offers numerous legal clinics for Dallas County residents. For more information, dallasbar.org/DVAP.
This is Kimberly Truex of the GLBT Wedding Expo, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and our guest is Steve Ramos. He is the new editor of Dallas Voice. This week was the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination down in Dealey Plaza, and the city had a choice. They could have either opened Dealey Plaza to the general public, or they could have something going on there and close Dealey Plaza off. And because of the fear of a copycat event, that's what they really wanted to do. So they did this very limited event, 5,000 people. When you looked at it on television, Dealey Plaza was half empty because 5,000 people didn't show up. It was a miserable day out, and they did not let additional people in. You had to apply for tickets. One person who went told me he applied about 4 months in advance. Everybody went through a background check. Yeah, they had about a two-hour long, tedious ceremony. And when I say tedious, we were watching it on TV. It was just a long, tedious ceremony for no reason.
They had to congregate at the American Airlines Center, and then they were bused in. So that they could,
control who was there. Because there was a perimeter around it. You couldn't get within two or three blocks of Dealey Plaza. County offices were closed. The sixth-floor museum was closed until 3 o'clock. DART, the red and blue line, stopped running because it goes around, as I put it, around the pergola where the second shooter was standing. I did a viewpoint on it, and somebody noticed that I put that in and said, "Yeah, we're doing great until you mentioned that." There was a woman who was there that I knew. She's referred to in the Warren Commission as the lady in red. Her name was Jean Hill. And she said she was standing right in front of that. She heard the shot. She turned around, and she saw a puff of smoke from there. I'm not a big conspiracy theorist. I just think it was more than one person, which does make it a conspiracy.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that the CIA, oh my God, just because George H.W. Bush, who was in the CIA at the time, was in Dallas the day before. I'm really not going through all that stuff. I really am not. I just think it was a few people who were involved.
Well, I've been fascinated. In fact, at a very early age, I was reading a lot of those conspiracy books, and my mom would say, "You shouldn't be reading that." And a 9-year-old to be reading a full book about the Kennedy assassination, I thought was pretty good because my vocabulary, was hopping. But Thursday, I had the coverage on, and I worked from home, so I was headed on going in local coverage. And they were talking to the guy who had driven him, given Oswald a ride for Fort Worth. And the reporter said, "The alleged shooter of John F. Right. Kennedy." He used the word alleged.
Mm-hmm. I guess because he was never convicted.
Right, but we.
But if they're maintaining that there was no conspiracy, then he is the shooter. It's not alleged anymore.
Exactly. And the Warren Commission sort of said, stamp, that's it.
The government says that he is the shooter. Mm-hmm. So it's not alleged.
Right. But I thought it was interesting that a local reporter would use the word alleged.
But the second commission in the 70s did conclude that there might have been other people involved without naming any of them. The other conspiracy theory part of it that I think is interesting, they just released this week some of Jack Ruby's papers. Mm-hmm. What are they holding them for? If this isn't a conspiracy, if Jack Ruby was just this lone gunman, crazy person who decided to go in and shoot Oswald, what are we holding these papers for?
Yeah, they should put it out there and end those theories. Mm-hmm. If they have the information that can end them, then put it out there.
Okay, so in our office, we were talking. Actually, it started off with me ranting.
Imagine David ranting. Yeah.
He knows me already. But what did we come up with that we really thought would have been a more appropriate commemoration?
Dallas really did miss an opportunity, as David said, because I was telling people that I have an aunt who at that time had moved to Wyoming. I remember she told me that they moved to Cheyenne. And, I think they were there at the time of the assassination. They went to the drive-in, and they still had Texas tags. And so they went to the drive-in, and people were really nasty to them. You Texans, get out of here, murderers, and all that. So Dallas really missed an opportunity here and I think the state of Texas, to show that we are not 1963 Dallas, that we, mm-hmm. in its 50 years, we have evolved. And what they did, I think, was focus in on the horribleness of the assassination. Instead of celebrating the city that has emerged because of that, to where David and I were talking earlier, it could have been this incredible celebration of culture, and also 1963, you know, we say it's the end of Camelot, but also it was the beginning of all these revolutions, social revolutions, that brought about women's rights, gay rights, civil rights, that began with that. And, you know, those of us who are alive and remember it, it began this period where, yes, there was some chaos, but out of that chaos, you know, from the bricks of Camelot, these organizations started building a foundation on which they built their civil rights movements. So Dallas could, and Fort Worth could have, we could have had a tremendous celebration to show that we are now the city of arts, which is a Kennedy legacy, you know, the Kennedy Center in D.C. And because Dallas, it says it's the New York City of the South. And so we have these incredible museums in Fort Worth and Dallas. We have incredible music here. And to show that the city that has become, the city that has evolved from that day, and instead they focused on that day and not of who we are today. So as David was pointing out, there should have been an organized, just this incredible orchestration of all the minorities coming together are celebrating the rights that we have achieved now and the arts that we have in Dallas now with the Meyerson, with Bass Hall in Fort Worth, with the Dallas Opera. And as David pointed out,
the Windspear City Performance
Hall. Right.
City Performance Hall, and I said this in my Viewpoints piece, should have been booked 3 performances a day, and it should have been, are you going to the dance thing there? No, I'm going to the lecture that's afterwards, and I'm going, you know. The Dallas Museum of Art that features Arts and Letters Live and brings in authors, and it sells out months in advance. Well, if it was part of this weekend, can you imagine? And I don't know what authors.
And you know, David, instead of the world, because when I went to the museum the day before, mm-hmm. there were international television crews there. Mm-hmm. Instead of them focusing on November of 1963, we could have been showing the world who Dallas is today, mm-hmm. and Fort Worth as well, but also Texas, because there could have been statewide events in Houston and San Antonio, Fort Worth,
and Dallas.
And
you know how that figures in, actually? The day before, it was a Thursday, Kennedy flew to Houston. He mm-hmm. made a speech in Houston, and he flew to Fort Worth.
He flew from Fort Worth to Dallas.
After speaking mm-hmm. in Fort Worth, he flew to Dallas. And then from here, he was supposed to go down to Austin. Feature all of the cities.
But also, I'm sorry, Patty, but okay. David and I were speaking earlier, Kenny being Catholic, and I'm Catholic, you know, the bishop, there should have been this great celebration at the cathedral here. The cardinal should have had a great mass at St. Patrick's in New York City. So we missed this opportunity to show the world not only what Texas, Dallas, but what we have become as a nation because of the Kennedy administration and then Johnson's with the Great mm-hmm. Society, the passage of civil rights and that began with Kennedy and Johnson. So as a city and as a country, we missed an opportunity.
You know, and it should have been a year before that we started, or mm-hmm. longer, that we started planning this, but a year ago, register with us here at the city what your group is going to do. DGLA could have done this wonderful something.
Yeah, lots of people could have done something.
Yeah.
And, you know, my manager is from Tampa, lives in Tampa, and we were talking that day. In fact, while all of that was going on, the ceremonies and such, and she said Tampa was nuts because he'd left Tampa to go to Fort Worth or Houston, wherever. Mm-hmm. But he'd left Tampa to come to Texas that week, that day. And so they were rereading the speech he gave there. They were doing all of these things in commemoration of the 50th anniversary. But what struck me in talking about that and looking back on what Dallas chose to do, one, they did have a young woman named Monica Saldivar who sang the national anthem, Latina, from Booker T. Washington mm-hmm. Arts Magnet School. And so I thought that was really good. And then the color guard from the Dallas Police Department had like 3 African Americans, 1 Hispanic, and 1 Anglo guy. Mm-hmm. And you know, I thought that was great because everyone was watching it on the television. I was going, good job. As at least the pieces they did sort of reflect. It wasn't like pasty white guys. You know, I mean, it could have been.
And they did that, but it was still in the context of what happened at Dealey Plaza,
right.
And let's keep everybody away from Dealey Plaza.
Well, they painted over the X mm-hmm. on the roadway. Well, they didn't do that. They repaved. That's how you get rid of paint on a road, is repave. You know, it's just nuts. But what struck me, too, was that when, for one, I remember as a child, my mom told me that they had agreed that all of this stuff would not be released, all of this information that's still classified, for 75 years.
Right.
So even at 50 years, they didn't do it.
No.
So who knows how much more will come out. But they, the Kennedys and others wanted a generation to pass before anybody really knew. So I've always held out there that there's something else very significant in those.
Well, there obviously is. If there are more papers that will not be released now for another 25 years, of course there's more.
Absolutely, there's more. And, you know, we've suffered as a city, as the city of hate kind of reputation for decades. And I remember it didn't change until basically JR got shot.
Mm-hmm.
And after JR got shot, South Fork, for the first time in our city's history, became the number one attraction in Dallas. Of course, it's tiny. It's like 3 by 4 inches or something. It's really small.
And the world watched that episode of Dallas.
Yes. We're known for shootings. And I mean, it's fictional, but my gosh, that's the thing that surpassed Dealey Plaza was the shooting of JR.
And that's what we were trying to say Dallas should have done now, another generation later. Dallas should have then been known for, and the number one tourist attraction should have been, the Arts District this weekend.
Yes.
It should have been. Patty, which performances did you go to or are you going to go to after the show today?
That should have been the buzz. Yeah. And it should have been the D-Link and DART and everybody free riding, you know, get you there. Let's have a week of commemoration. Get there however you can. We're going to help you get there. It's all these events are free. Go and celebrate.
All of the city. The Arboretum should have done something. The theaters up in North Dallas. Not just the arts. There should have been so much going on this weekend that everybody in the city was participating in something. You know, and every hotel room in the city should have been sold out.
It was an opportunity to showcase.
Yeah. And when I say that every hotel room in the city should have been sold out, it sounds like, that sounds like you're really commercializing it. Yeah. So,
but not about the assassination per se, about
who
the Dallas
become.
Of today.
Yeah.
And the New York Times did a great piece that included a feature featured about Lupe Valdez, our sheriff in Dallas County, how she's a Latino lesbian. Mm-hmm. Latina lesbian, and the sheriff 50 years ago, and all of the contrast.
He wasn't a Latina lesbian, was he?
No, he was not.
But it shows you how much the city has evolved to where not only do we have a Hispanic, but she's gay.
In her third term.
Yeah.
In her third term.
Of Dallas County, one of the largest counties in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is Henry Wade country in terms of Dallas County.
Sure. This
and
is
we have an African-American DA. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things that have changed dramatically since then. You know, the Texas Theater is still up and going, and I thought that was interesting that they played the same movie that was run that day.
They did.
It was War is Hell, speaking of war. But, you know, they revived that and made it something different. It's not only about what happened there in terms of that story 50 years ago. It's a thriving thing.
You know, it should have been part of the celebration. And I mean celebration. I mean it just that way. You know, just like, because this was the point of the story in the Dallas Voice, that assassination really started something. It started the civil rights, not started the civil rights era, but
fueled it.
It fueled it. It was after that the civil rights legislation made it over the hump and got put into
well, it became very, very aggressive because the movement had certain relationship with Kennedy, and now they had to have a relationship with LBJ, and that relation, fueling that relationship building in that moment, he was either going to do it or he wasn't, and so they it was prodded ahead to do the whole thing and do it.
Stonewall was in 1969. It didn't happen in a vacuum. We were building up to Stonewall. Things were happening during the 60s. Gay people were beginning to understand being arrested just for going to the bar. That's not okay anymore. We are people. We do deserve some rights. And, you know, something happened at that one bar at that one time. It was this one raid where it was mostly the drag queens who were in that bar just said, not this time. And they rebelled. But it didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened, and I really think, starting with the Kennedy assassination.
Well, I think that... I'm sorry, Penny.
Oh, go ahead.
I think that... beginning in 1963, because if you think about music, for example...
Excuse me.
Ah, that was Steve's.
I'm sorry. I turned it off, but it's still going nuts. But anyway...
These tables kind of echo.
I'll sit on my phone, okay? I'm going to sit on it and so you can't hear it. I'll just feel it vibrating. But in 1963, if you look back even at the music, a lot of, you know, the parents were and their kids were listening to almost the same kind of music. It started to kind of separate with Elvis, maybe. But you look before that, there was just music, and parents listened to big band, and the kids listened to big band. It was the same thing. And then something happened around that time. You know, the Beatles started, all that started. And then the young people had their own music, and they were thinking differently mm-hmm. than their parents were. And I think the assassination, it just shattered this, I don't know if you want to call it a dream or this image or whatever, and young people just begin to have a voice. And women, the blacks and gays, they found their voice. I don't know if y'all agree with that, but mm-hmm. it's
well, it was innocence lost. You know,
it was, and then we were already in Vietnam, but not to the extent of say 67. Okay, and so that fueled it because now we're finding our voice. We have our own, the younger generation. You know, as a kid in grade school, but. The first record I ever bought was "I Want to Hold Your Hand," you know, and it was so big that they were selling at this little, it was called Roscoe's, we call it, this little corner grocery store.
You will never believe what the first record I bought was.
Did they have records, David?
They did.
Tell us, what is this record you speak of?
It was the Ballad of the Green Berets.
I remember that.
I remember that as well.
But I remember him on Ed Sullivan doing it.
Yes, right.
He was on Ed Sullivan, I remember, and did it. And then with, you know, how young people were just so opposed to Vietnam for the most part. And so they found their voice. I think a lot of different groups, there was this almost like this collective voice. And then after 1963, groups found their voices. And then, you know, with Vietnam, with the unhappiness of that. And so young people with the campus riots, you know. And so, and then the... You know, beginning in Stonewall in New York, so then gays found their voice. And when you're talking about the drag queens, you know, I have tremendous respect for drag queens now because, and for the butch lesbians too, because they started this. And I think they're very brave people because for all these years, they have been on the forefront, you know. And during the AIDS epidemic, the money, the millions of dollars that drag queens raised for these causes.
And still do.
And so... You know, as editor of the Dallas Voice, it's really important for me that they have a voice because we owe so much to those people. And you think about bravery because they're out there and they're not shy about who they are and they're going to the stores and there's no doubt who they are or what they are. And I think that's very brave because I know for me, for many times, I just kind of wanted to blend into the wall and pass, I guess, whatever. And here are these people, we're fighting these battles for us and raising all this money for us. So when you talk about that they started it, but they were the warriors all through the fight for gay rights.
We need to take a break. Speaking of raising a lot of money, the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Dallas, they were on our show about a month ago, had an event. Patty and I were both there. Do you know how much money they raised?
At the Audubon Society.
For the Audubon Center. They raised and gave them a check for $145,000 from.
Wow!
Yeah, that was.
That's a pond.
So that's almost a lake. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, and we'll be back with more right after this.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now is the time to make your pledge count. Be sure to send it in to KNON 5353 Maple Avenue, Dallas, Texas 75235. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by donating online at knon.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. KNON 5353 Maple Avenue, Dallas, Texas 75235. Be sure to include the name of the show you're supporting. For questions about the pledge drive, 214-828-9500. Extension 234.
Don't be a Scrooge. Give the blues to the music lover on your list. KNON has the perfect CD or LP for you. Texas Blues Radio Volume 5. Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 features acoustic blues, instrumental blues, party songs, somebody done somebody wrong songs, baby got a good thing songs, six-pack and devil's back songs, gumbo, jive, T-bone, and hip-shaking songs from a fine selection of great Texas blues artists. So do right by the blues and give some Texas blues this year. Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 CD is available at KNON.org, Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, and in Dallas at Bill's Records. Vinyl copies are at Forever Young Records for that vinyl fan on your list. Downloads are available at CDBaby.com. All proceeds are a gift to KNON.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Laurent will be back with us next week. And Patty, you were just saying during the break.
Yeah, I was just recounting how I remember in the 70s, some younger people today might not remember, think of this at all, but in the 70s and 80s, it was a big question. Where were you when you first heard that JFK was shot? And, you know, I grew up overseas, and so I was asking people in all of those locations. And then beyond, when I travel, I ask them about it. And, and there was that big SNL spoof that was just great. And if you should look it up on YouTube, I'm sure it's there. But, you know, the question was, where were you? And what do you remember about it? And to a person, everyone I knew and talked to about who was in another country and from another country, expected war, that they were getting ready to get under their desks. They were that.
Who were they expecting that we were going to attack?
They didn't know. They didn't know. But the tensions at the time, remember, we'd just gone through
the Cuban Missile Crisis,
the Bay of Pigs. I mean, all of these things, the Khrushchev, detente that was happening. And all of that sort of like accumulated and snowballed.
They were probably expecting that we would attack Cuba and Russia would step in and
right. This was not about some wacko individual, or individuals choosing to shoot a president. Mm-hmm. This for them, when you receive the news, it's the president of the United States has been killed. Mm-hmm. So now, what other actions are going to fall out from that? And they braced, and they braced, and they prayed, mm-hmm. Because they didn't know what sector would it be? China? Would it be Russia? Would it be the USSR at that time? Mm-hmm.
Two major powers, though,
right?
With nuclear weapons,
right? And so it was a very, very big deal for them. The whole world was watching to see what would happen, and of course they. The subsequent hours and days, the finger was pointing to Oswald, mm-hmm. And so the whole world was watching who did this. Mm-hmm. And there are still conspiracy theorists out there who are not Americans. They're in other countries who have determined in their own minds that it's not settled. It's not settled that he did it mm-hmm. alone. So I just think it's interesting from an international perspective
mm-hmm. that
other people think. And they think of Dallas as the city where Kennedy was killed.
Sure.
You know?
Because we've done very little to change that.
Until J.R. was shot. JR. And then we were the city where J.R. was shot.
A couple of other things that have gone on this week. Texas National Guard. The National Guard is under orders from the federal government, which funds it, to register same-sex couples. Steve, what happened this week?
Oh, several things happened. Texas is still defiant, but one of the interesting things that happened, too, was in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, I love Oklahoma.
And the governor there, because that state is also defying federal orders. And so in order to avoid giving same-sex couples the benefits that the federal government has said that they are entitled to, when one spouse is serving in the National Guard. And so the governor there just said, we're not going to give anybody any benefits in the National Guard.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's
insane. And so first
it's
they were
equality.
Saying, so yeah, so now the new the Oklahoma governor is saying, well, now we're equal. And for me, I keep harping about it. To me, it's all, we're back in the 50s and the 60s, where the federal government is saying, you will integrate, and the southern states, Texas included, is saying, we give them education, just not with us, but it's equal because they have their schools and we have our schools. And they, we let them come in our restaurants, but they have to stand up and order and then leave. They can't sit down. And so it's kind of the same thing with what's going on, because these are southern states that are defined again. And I keep harping, and anybody who will listen to me, is that, you know, what is it about the South that we love to have our butts kicked by the federal government before we will evolve socially? And it's going to happen. But each time it takes the federal government, the Yankees, to come down one more time and make us evolve socially.
Well, all Hagel, who's the defense secretary, has to do, all of the equipment that the National Guard uses is federal equipment.
He should pull it all out.
All he has to do is start. All he has to do is threaten that he's going to take the National Guard's planes and mm-hmm. tanks and bullets
and trucks and stuff. Because you know, the National Guard, even in a local disaster, wouldn't have that equipment.
Right.
But that's still our southern mentality, that we won't do anything until the federal government just puts its boot on our neck and makes us do it. So, you know, back at Central High, they had to send National Guard troops into mm-hmm. Central High. They stayed there the whole year. They sent them into Mississippi. And now we have, in order for us to comply, it's going to take the federal government doing something drastic again.
Did you see Stephen Colbert's take on this? It was so funny. He was saying, you know, this is equality, and you know, you can't give it to gay people because it just ruins it for straight people. He said, just like, take public education. There are gay kids in those schools, so we should close all of the public schools because we don't want our straight kids going to school and learning that they might be gay. Close the schools.
Because that's equal for everybody.
And he said, you know, we thought it was okay when they did away with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because who thought gay people would want to serve? But now that there are gay people in the military, we need to get rid of it.
And in
it's a
Texas.
Very conservative viewpoint.
It is a conservative viewpoint. She's brilliant, this Mary Fallon. Oh, she's not going to get reelected, but she's brilliant.
Well, that's, I mean, you see it with GSAs, you see it with all the kinds of things. The minute, you know, anybody says, well, we want gays to be included here, mm-hmm. they say, well, nobody can have it now.
Right.
Nobody can have it.
You know, we
family benefits at, like, the family memberships mm-hmm. at, like, Baylor, you know, rather than, you know, let the gay couple have a family membership at a cheaper
they
rate.
Did away with
family no memberships. Family memberships for anybody.
Because,
it's a common ploy.
Because two guys who could have joined as individuals anyway
asked to get the rate that everybody else gets.
Mm-hmm. No. Steve and I went to a GSA over at Bryan Adams High School a couple of weeks ago. That GSA started this year with 100 members.
Wow.
And it's 8 years old.
Wow.
And growing.
That's pretty significant. That's a big group of people.
And I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who graduated from Bryan Adams, and he was surprised that Bryan Adams had it mm-hmm. and that it's that old. But it was so powerful because you have these young people, and some of them aren't gay. You know, they have either gay parents. There was one young lady, her grandmother was gay, but that they have a place that they can go, because being raised in the Texas Panhandle, which is farming and ranching country, and the Panhandle was Republican when Texas was Democratic. Okay?
Right.
The Panhandle was the only part of Texas that Lyndon Johnson didn't carry. And there used to be an Air Force base in Amarillo. But when the Panhandle didn't vote for Johnson, Johnson said, oh, okay, I got something for you. I'm closing your Air Force base down. So it, you know, in the 60s, that base closed. But being raised there, I mean, it's a whole different time. I was back in the 70s, but I don't even see that happening now in a Texas Panhandle school. Those kids would be, they wouldn't feel comfortable, I don't think. And I don't think the school would do it, and I don't think the community would allow it either. So to go with David to Bryan Adams and seeing that the school and DISD is supportive, you know, and that, you know, that these young people have a place to go and to ask questions, because it's confusing to be a teenager. But when you're saddled with this, and it's so sad, because when you hear some of their questions, because one young lady was, one of the speakers was a United Methodist minister, Nancy, and one of the young women had a question about religion. She wanted to know how she could come to terms with the garbage that she's been taught that she's going to hell. And, I mean, what a horrible thing to tell a young person, just because...
Well, we were told that.
We were told that. Oh,
well,
absolutely.
Well, Patty, you are.
Oh, yeah, I am. I am. I'm a recovering Southern Baptist who went to Baylor.
I went to Catholic school, and I was told I'd go to hell if I ever went to a Protestant church.
Really?
Well, I was told this. I mean, Sister Josita said, okay, now you can go to a Protestant church, but she said it in a way like, why would you want to? She said, but if you ever become a Protestant, you go to hell. Oh, right. Okay.
But what would it be if you were Catholic going to a Protestant church and dared to dance?
Ooh.
Oh, see, then you could be a champion of the Catholic Church.
Well, I always knew my Baptist friends, because, you know, the Catholics, you know, we dance and we drink, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of our fundraisers were, and we digress here.
Yeah, that's listeners. Okay. We do that on the show.
And so a lot of our fundraisers at the Catholic Church were dances. And so my Baptist friends would, Monday morning, they'd laugh and they'd say, you know, we always know when y'all have a dance over the weekend. And I say, how? And they say, well, that's our sermon. When their pastor is preaching against those heathen Catholics that were out there, you know, whooping it up on the dance floor.
Yeah, that is pretty pretty dangerous of you Catholics.
Yeah.
You dance.
Huh. Oh, imagine. Wow. Yeah. So, but anyway, the Methodist minister, you could tell she was really concerned.
Hurt
that
by it.
She was hurt, and she said, you know, when I hear that you're told you're going to hell, it's like I'm being stabbed in the heart. So it's interesting because, and this can bring us to this, where there was a church trial in Pennsylvania mm-hmm. for a minister who officiated his son's gay marriage. And what's interesting...
His marriage.
Pardon?
His marriage. I'll correct you. It's not. There's no gay marriage.
Oh, his marriage. I'm sorry. So... But I think it's important to everybody to understand it was why he got
right. It's marriage to his partner, but it's still a marriage.
And so
that's my point.
And you're right. And so this happened several years ago. The statute of limitations. He told his supervisors that he was going to officiate this ceremony, so he didn't do it secretly. They did it in Massachusetts, where same-sex marriage is legal in there.
And I just heard he's done a number of others since.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the statute of limitations was about to run out. I don't know if in the church, in that church it's 6 or 7 years, but it was about to run out. And then just a couple of weeks before it was going to run out, somebody brought it up. And so they brought him to, like, this, you know, it's like Salem, Massachusetts back.
This tribunal.
And, you know, the Spanish Inquisition, and you will recant or we're going to quarter you and burn you at the stake.
And here's what he got. He got a 30-day suspension. During that time, he has to decide whether or not he's going to follow all church mm-hmm. rules. And what he said was... that basically he doesn't see how he's not following church rules. And by the way, if anybody would like to get married, I would love to officiate during that period.
But and they told him that he would be defrocked if he if he chooses to remain in the
but
the
I think this is going to be a catalyst
that.
In the Methodist Church, that it's going to force them to start talking about that. And even we did a story where the
he's
Catholic
not first.
Church,
I mean, this has been going on for years. Yeah. I'm a Methodist, and it's been going on for years in the Methodist Church.
And for the first time in my history in the Catholic Church, the Pope Francis has ordered the bishops to send out a survey to Catholics worldwide, asking for their input on contraception, on same-sex marriage, on women's role in the church. I'm 55, I've never seen the church ask for something like this. This is almost like another Vatican II, a big reform. But, you know, the Catholic Church is facing another Reformation if it doesn't evolve. And so the Methodist Church, I think this is great that it's happened because it's going to be a catalyst for discussion in the Methodist Church.
Because and it has been, and I think it's coming to a head mm-hmm. because they really have to say, are we really going to... oust ordained ministers in our faith
mm-hmm. and members of our faith
over this issue mm-hmm. or are we going to come to terms with it, because the Methodist Church has traditionally historically been a very welcoming
denomination. Here's the other part of it. It was his son's wedding that he officiated at, and actually it turns out 3 of his 4 children are gay.
Wow.
But
so he'll be doing it again.
So but
hopefully.
But the point is here, are we going to tell you that supporting your child is a wrong thing? And that's what they're asking him to do. Not support your child. Don't be a good parent.
And not support your child's loving relationship.
Mm-hmm. And healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you assume when somebody's getting
married...
When
they talk about this God of love, how can a God of love not... want you to be in a loving relationship? Why would he care who it's with? It's
right.
A loving relationship. And so they're so worried about defining who can get married, but they're throwing the whole love thing out, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
The other thing that I read in where it was in the Washington Post this morning, his church, they love him. So they're expecting most of this church to walk out
if he's thrown out.
Well, you saw David and Patty. Did y'all see read the news and we blogged about it, where the bishop from Springfield, Illinois, right after when Illinois passed that legislation to legalize same-sex marriage, and so he called it an evil, and he was going to have an exorcism.
I know. Aaron and I were talking about that.
Church is an exorcism is something taken extremely seriously, and you have to go through this very long, lengthy process about to determine if something is actually demon-possessed. And so here's this bishop, and I'm speaking as a Catholic too. I wish they would have applied that outrage when the scandal broke about the young boys being abused.
Exorcism was needed then.
Yes.
For sure.
Right. Instead, they didn't protect the children, they protected the pedophile priests. And so I wish this bishop would have been this outraged when that happened, that the children were protected. And now, again, we're talking about loving relationships, and he's calling this evil. And he's calling social evolvement evil.
And it's an hyperbole that is it's offensive.
Right-wing crazy said that the tornadoes that happened in Illinois were a result of gay marriage. His name is Robert Ritchie. He's executive director of America Needs Fatima, a project of the American Society for the Defense of Tradition, Family, and Property. How's that for an organization name?
Well, the Family Research Council. I mean, I subscribe to all this stuff, and it drives my partner nuts. Because she can't handle it. But the Family Research Council this week has made a call for it. The marriage battle is not over. Mm-hmm. Come back. Send us money.
Well, it's a great way to raise money.
Sure. It is.
They have to have something to hate. Because people don't realize during the Civil Rights Movement, they think it was just these extremists who were fighting integration. No. These were Southern governors who were standing in the doorway of the university saying, no, the blacks will not come here. These were the pillars of the community who were fighting integration. And so it's the same mindset today. Once we're evolving once again. And it's churches who are fighting social evolvement that has to come, just like they did back then in the 60s.
And I want to thank you, Steve, for being here with us today. Come back to see us again.
Thank you.
I know where to find you. There was a Dear Amy column this week. It started off with, I recently discovered that my son, who's 17, is a homosexual, and what should I do about this? And her answer, whether or not this was a real letter or not, her answer is perfect. It starts with, you could teach your son an important lesson by changing your own sexuality to show him how easy it is.
Wow.
That's all it for us today on Lambda Weekly. We'll be back next week with more. Have a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you, and happy Hanukkah today.
No, Wednesday.
It starts
Wednesday night. Yes, coincides with Thanksgiving.
But not with Christmas this year.
It has nothing to do with Christmas. We found another holiday to ruin. And we'll be back next week with more.